Hello, everyone, and welcome to this very overdue episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of super yachting is the Queen of Cornwall herself, otherwise known as Boat International's travel and charter editor, Georgia Biscowen. Hey, Queenie.
Hello. It's good to be back.
It feels like we haven't done this for a long time.
But I think the last time was the last time we did this.
Yeah.
Months.
But I think as Europeans, we have quite a lazy extended summer hiatus.
Speak for yourself. We have been away though, haven't we?
Yeah. I mean, everyone's been on holiday. Lots of people still on holiday, actually. There's still a reasonably satisfying chunk of summer still to come.
Yeah, but never too early to look at the winter season.
Yeah, I can't believe we're going to be doing that a bit later in the podcast. Yeah. We'll be looking ahead to the winter, and Queenie's going to talk about
basically how to get the most out of your charter. It's not all about St. Bart's in New Year, basically. There are loads of other places. And I spent some time speaking to the brokers and asking them about where they thought the coolest places were. So it's interesting.
It is interesting. Okay, so we'll be looking ahead to the cold season a bit later on. But first, we're going to talk through all the headlines that have been generated this summer in the super yacht industry, because there's been quite a few big breaking news stories that we haven't had a chance to dwell on the podcast yet. So we'll talk through those. But how's your summer been?
It's been so good.
Yeah?
I've been to Indonesia.
Have you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I know. I did an amazing trip to Indonesia with on board Sililona.
With
the owner, and it was incredible. It's such a cool offering.
Well, Sililona was one of the original breed of big soup luxury Finisi, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They kind of, him, Trent Seery.
Yeah, Trent Seery.
Yeah, and his mum, Patty, right?
Yeah.
So they were real pioneers in that market.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tresno.
But they really were. And I think what's really cool is when we went out, their connections are unbelievable. So we did some really interesting meetings with tribes and incredible village elders, and they just have so much respect for them and their family. And it's really special. So Tresno's mother was incredible in that field.
Yeah.
Just spent so much time building those connections and helping and just being an incredible philanthropist in Bali and Indonesia. And it was really special to see how much they respected them. And we were very lucky to be a part of that. It was amazing. And we did that with Cookson as well. So it was a really cool insight into how you can make that really special. And it was really special.
Yeah.
And their beach setups were amazing. Every evening there would be a lot of there's a lot of boozing, and there was a lot of jumping off the bow.
Sounds like your cup of tea.
Loads of work. Yeah, lots of work. And it was exactly my cup of tea. And the diving is amazing out there as well.
Yeah. Really. Which part of Indonesia?
We did the Flores Islands.
Okay.
And which is kind of, you fly via kind of Komodo and go down, but it's so special. And I've never seen a volcano erupt in real life.
Wow.
We went fishing really early one morning, so it's pitch black, and the crew were all standing out on the deck, and we sort of, it was 4 a.m. we're like, oh, it's so early, and then we looked in the distance and there was just this huge volcano erupting, and we were like, oh my god. And they were just like, yeah, happens all the time, because the route was called the Ring of Fire, so it's all about volcanoes and all this crap. But it was insane. So
that's
beautiful.
Incredible.
And I'd never really considered Indonesia before. And the water is amazing. The culture is incredible. It's so beautiful. And you get volcanoes and diving. It was amazing. Can't recommend it enough.
One of my favorite ever features that we've written at Boat International was maybe 5 or 6 years ago. It was all about building Finisis in Indonesia, and there's no shipyards for these things as such. They're basically built on the beach by these ancient, using ancient kind of shipwright techniques and out of ironwood. Yeah, it's an incredible process, and there's some amazing stories, because some of the places where they get built feel like a real frontier. And there's stories about, you know, boats being, you know, nicked by local mafia.
No
and
way.
The Wild West of super yachting, we called it, because, you know, it is a very, very remote place. And the village where a lot of them are built is only accessible after a kind of a bumpy 5-hour car ride over mountains and things like that to find the right wood and find the right people who know what they are doing. So it was a great story, actually. But, you know, the reason people go there is because you can build a, you know, 40-something meter Venice that's full of all the luxuries you'd expect for a very, very reasonable amount of money.
Yeah, and I also think that they have such character.
Yeah.
They are such a pleasure to be on board. And I think there are a few bigger brands that are trying to tap into that market, and it'll be interesting to see how that goes, because I think part of the beauty is their kind of the family connections, the locality, like it's all that kind of really amazing local togetherness that makes it so beautiful.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting because there are a few happening. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say the brands, so I'm not, but you can Google it. It's all quite, I think it's quite common knowledge. But yeah, an amazing experience. And as a charter guest, because they are kind of on the same level, you pay a similar fee as you would a normal white boat. But I just think the character's amazing. And the crew are all so incredible. And they've all got stories. And they all really believe in the product and where they are. And you know, when we were cruising around, they were like, this is my island. And they tell you all about it. It's so special.
Yeah. The crews are amazing.
Crews are amazing. And then I think what else is really nice is that there are a lot of things, like a lot of rituals. So when you first set off, there has to be an offering, and there's, you know, there's music. And initially when you step on, you're like, oh, it's for us. You know, it's a show for us. It's really not. Like, it's really not. If they didn't make that offering, the belief is that it's unsafe not to do that. So it was really cool to see all that. So I can't recommend it enough.
I was very lucky a few years ago to be invited out to spend some time on Dunia Baru with
amazing.
With my family, and the kids were quite young then. And I know it's kind of poor form on white med boats to expect crew to look after your kids. I mean, the crew have got an incredibly busy job, you know, and they're not nannies. But on this Venice, that was sort of my expectation, but the crew just completely adopted the children.
That's amazing.
And, you know, walking around with them until they went to sleep and things like that, you know, they could not do enough. And I was, from a kind of a Western perspective, I felt a bit guilty. You know, this isn't your job. Obviously, you've already got a super busy job. You don't need to look after the kids, but they just completely embraced the children, and they could not do enough. It was so, so lovely.
Really special.
Well, let's kick off with what is arguably the biggest story of the summer in the super yachting world, and that was Ocean Co.'s acquisition by American billionaire Gabe Newell. So anyone who's played a computer game in the last 20 years should be familiar with Newell. He had a stint at Microsoft early in his career, but he left to form Valve Software and developed the well-known computer game Half-Life. He later helped bring Steam to market, which allowed players to download computer games digitally. So instead of having to actually leave your house, physically procure a copy of the computer game, you just kind of downloaded it. And I've bought some games on Steam in the past.
Have
you? My oldest daughter is a very loyal customer of Steam.
Cool. What kind of things are, what kind of games are they?
Just all sorts.
All of them?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
So anyway, there's very clever innovation. Has made him enormously wealthy.
Yeah.
The many billions kind of wealthy. And as such, he took a natural interest in yachting, and he found a particular tendresse for boats built by, you guessed it, Ocean Co. So he bought it.
Why not? Yeah.
Love the shipyard, buy the shipyard.
Yeah, exactly.
The deal completed in late July. The Al-Balwani family, who are the former owners, retained control of Turquoise Yachts. So they're staying in the boat building game, which is great. But it's all very exciting for Ocean Co. as they embark on this new journey. We got a statement from the shipyard that read, Gabe Newell is not entering this world as a financier or strategist, but as a hands-on visionary who respects the sea, the craft, and above all else, the people who make it possible. He wants Ocean Co. to continue on what it actually already does best, placing people first. This is not about buying a yacht company. It's about plugging into a team and exploring what kind of future they can create where nothing holds them back.
I like that. Yeah. It's cool.
It's nice to put people first. And look, Gabe Newell is well known as being a tech visionary. So he will, I'm sure, have some very firm ideas about where he wants to take the shipyard. So it's, there were rumors rumbling earlier in the year about a potential acquisition of Ocean Co. And obviously Newell's name was mentioned as one of those people, you know, that people were speculating was interested in the shipyard. So interesting that he, interesting the ink to the deal in July. And I guess we'll see, you know, there'll be lots of this, lots of Gabe Newell, Ocean Co chat at the Monaco Yacht Show, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
So it'll be good to get a few more insights from the guys about his intentions. But the acquisition comes at a busy time for Ocean Co. Four major 80-meter plus projects are currently under construction, according to Boat Pro at the shipyard.
Do we know, does he have one?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And
the, off the record.
This, yeah. They're, I mean.
On the record.
So, yeah, great news for Ocean Co. Big, very wealthy new backer and exciting times ahead.
Yeah.
What's the next big story, Queenie?
America's Cup.
America's Cup.
Exciting. Really, really exciting. So, to the world of sailing, and after a few bitter words were traded earlier in the year about the choice of Naples as a destination for the next America's Cup, it seems a coming together has been achieved between the teams with the agreement of the protocol for the next cup. As a reminder, Team New Zealand won the last cup in Barcelona, beating the Brits in the final. Subsequently, Ineos dropped its sponsorship of the British team, which is now called Athena Racing.
But it remains the challenger of record.
The challenger of record. The new protocol includes some pretty, for the America's Cup, groundbreaking changes. So if we're going to run through them, each team must have a female crew member and crews have been reduced to five. Three of those five crew, meanwhile, must be from the nation the boat is representing. There will also be a guest racer slot for the celebs.
I need some clarity on this celeb slot. So,
Is that what it says for the celebs?
Or influencers or...
Influencers?
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyone the boat wants to carry that they think, I suppose, will garner them the most attention.
Interesting.
But whether they'll be, you know, yanking ropes running from hull to hull. I don't really understand what exactly that means. So it'll be interesting talking to a few of the America's Cup insiders about what they expect the guest racer to do.
And this one I think is really interesting is the defender loses the right to choose the location for the next cup.
Which is a big step for the America's Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. There will also be a spending cap of 75 million euros.
Yeah.
What do we think about that?
I think it's good to bring some standardization to the cup. And it all kind of falls under this new governance body, the America's Cup Partnership. So all teams will have a voice. I've heard a few different things. Anecdotally, people have told me that they think it's a shame. I mean, the America's Cup is like crazy, weird and hard to understand. And it's the plaything of billionaires and with huge egos battling it out on the water. There is a magic to that, a mad kind of magic and a romance. But it makes the America's Cup quite hard to access for people who aren't kind of native to the industry or sailing. So if you want to get into the America's Cup from a standing start, it's not easy. The knowledge barrier to entry is quite high. And then, you know, someone wins the cup, all the rules change and you've got to figure it all out again. So, you know, I suppose it will lose some of that quirkiness. But, you know, lots of people are saying this is a very sensible decision.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, has the potential, with some standardization, there's potential for greater commerciality, bigger audiences.
Yeah. And I think last year, I don't know if it was just mainly because of Ineos, Ineos marketing, but I feel like it had the biggest level of interest that we've seen in a while. So everyone was much more in tune with it. And I think we all kind of knew, I know that we're in the world and we're in the industry, but everyone knew it was going on in Barcelona. It was kind of a normal conversation point. But I don't know, maybe this will be a new chapter.
Well, that's certainly what the signatories of this new America's Cup partnership are hoping. You know, it'll be run every 2 years, collective decision-making around venues and things like that. I mean, it's sort of what they were hoping to achieve pre-2017. So I always think back to the America's Cup in Bermuda in 2017 in moments like this. So before the Kiwis ran away with that one, it felt like there was some momentum building to bring in this kind of standardization. But then, of course, Team New Zealand turned up with its sight clause, won it all, took the cup to Auckland and rewrote the rule book, basically. So there was a growing movement to bring in this kind of, you know, repeatability to the cup, understandable repeatability. I always felt sorry for Bermuda after the 2017 cup, actually, because they put on a great show. It was a brilliant venue, kind of mid-Atlantic, you know, between the two big TV territories. And it seemed like it could find a long-term home in Bermuda. But obviously, that wasn't to happen.
I think the standardization is good for us because, as a potential interviewer, because I remember going out to Barcelona last year and someone suddenly said to me, oh, by the way, you're going to interview Ben. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't know the rules. Oh my God, I don't know what's going on. It's because I was invited, like it was quite early on in the regattas, but I had to frantically Google what the rules were and come up with some questions really quickly. And oh God, it was a nightmare. So now I can really understand a bit more.
Well, it's nice. It's nice that you don't have to kind of relearn the America's Cup.
Yeah.
Every few years.
I'm sure it's harder for the people actually involved, but I found it bloody challenging.
Yeah. Well, I mean, talking of your friend Sir Ben, he said, many of us that have been following the Cup feels this is a long time coming. The event needs to be financially sustainable. And to do that, there needs to be continuity and long-term planning. It's an exciting time and a seismic moment for the Cup. And lots of people calling it the biggest thing to happen to the America's Cup since its founding. I'm in the standardization camp as well. I just think if you want to bring in bigger audiences, you need to make it as easy to understand as possible.
Yeah, because it's such a cool sport and it's awesome. Such an amazing thing to watch.
And 75 million spending cap still means that, you know, it can still be the plaything of very wealthy people.
Do we know how much it was before? Just unlimited.
Hundreds of millions, yeah.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, got to be slightly more creative.
Yeah. Yeah, and they can use former hulls. You know, there's general agreement around, you know, boat type box rules, all that kind of stuff. So that's good. It's all good, I think. We shall see, though, in the long term if they can bring in some big sponsors and make it broaden the audience, basically. Yeah.
Maybe Ocean Co.
So moving on to Titan, the final report into the submersible implosion was released by the US Coast Guard. Over the summer, did you watch the Netflix documentary about it?
I've now watched it 3 times.
Have you?
Yeah.
It's terrifying, isn't it?
It is absolutely harrowing. I don't think that noise, I just don't think there's anything as frightening as that noise of the carbon fiber, fibers cracking.
I mean, how could you sit in it when it was making that noise? I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And it's just, it's riveting. And I love every time I speak to Rob McCallan from EOS, I try and sort of glean some more information from him because it is so fascinating and it is mad, that noise. Oh, I just wouldn't. It's so scary.
You're right.
Do you know what I think? I think that if I want to know if we were offered, if I got offered or invited on the trip, would you have been like, go on?
I would hope I would have reached out to the people that we know in that world.
Me too.
Like Rob, like Patrick from Triton.
I think we would have done because there were so many strange insurance things. And I think I find comfort in the fact that we would have done.
Mm.
But it's so frightening. It's in the documentary when the influencer goes down and just comes up a bit shaken. And I think I would have refused to do it if I knew I was being bolted in, because I've done loads of submarine stuff and you've done loads of submersible stuff and I have no problem with them at all, but everything looks very sound and everything is very sound. So, and I still have no problem with going in a submarine now because I think it's just obviously two different worlds, but it is frightening.
Yeah. There was two documentaries over the summer, wasn't there? There was the Netflix one and the BBC one. The Netflix one I thought was far superior because it really made an emphasis of the cracking noises in the carbon fiber hull.
It just shows you what kind of, if you have one person trying to push that agenda, it's just terrifying what can happen. But it was I thought they did very well with that production. It was very good.
They did.
And I thought Rob was very, very good on it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. He's the man. He knows what he's talking about.
Mm.
So the report underlined really what many people had already said about Oceangate and its doomed submersible. There was inadequate engineering and testing. There was lack of hull life analysis. There was an over-reliance on real-time monitoring. There was they continued using the sub after damage was recorded. The hull construction was flawed. There was a neglect of post-incident investigations. There was apparently a toxic workplace culture, the report found, and a lack of preventative maintenance. I mean, none of it is very good, is it? I mean, it's a real litany of failure on Oceangate's behalf.
It is just mad. That the toxic workplace culture really scares me, I think, because I think what it showed is if you're not on his wavelength, you're out. Like, and then we're just going to get more people. It was interesting. When I was talking to Rob about it, he was like, ultimately, he was going, the sky's red, the sky's red. And if you think the sky's blue, you're out.
Yeah.
Until everyone's just on the same narrative. And it's so dangerous.
Well, they said it was a hostile environment where raising safety concerns could lead to termination.
That's mad.
So like exactly like you said, it discouraged staff from reporting issues. Scary stuff. So there were some recommendations in the report also, including stronger regulatory oversight of experimental submersibles. I don't think anyone would disagree with that one. Revoking research vessel status for uncertified commercial operations, because obviously that's how they skirted a lot of the rules. Mm-hmm. Mandatory dive plans and emergency protocols, big tick. The report also suggested that the US Coast Guard should have resources dedicated to providing field support for vessels of novel design, because you don't want to completely inhibit innovation, but it's got to be done in the right way.
Mm.
So very sensible report in the end from the US Coast Guard, and I don't think anyone would disagree with any of its findings or recommendations. But if you haven't watched that Netflix doc yet, or if you're thinking, do I watch the BBC one or the Netflix one, I'd recommend you watch the Netflix one.
Yeah, I would
one.
Too. And also, once you, like initially, it gives you quite a lot of background, so it can take a while to get going. But once you're in the middle and things start getting really messy and terrifying, it's really good.
Yeah.
It's very, very good watch. I watched it on a plane, which felt stupid. in a tube. It's
another big headline from the summer.
Fee. Yes, there was another setback, unfortunately, for the Royal Halsman motor yacht Fee in July after the UK Supreme Court dismissed an appeal to overturn the decision to detain the yacht following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. During the hearing, the appellants criticised the government's assumption that Fee's owner is connected to the Russian regime, despite not appearing on any sanctions lists. They also argued that the decision to seize and detain Fee interfered with the owner's basic property rights and, consequently, human rights law. The government's lawyers, however, argued that the detainment was a restriction of use rather than an absolute denial of property rights. Maintenance on the yacht is still permitted, as is the presence of crew, and if the owner were to sell the yacht to someone with no connection to Russia, Fee would no longer be detained. In its judgment, the UK Supreme Court said that there was a rational connection between the detention of Fee and the aim of putting pressure on Russia, both economically and politically. The yacht's captain, Guy Booth, isn't giving up. He said that this outcome was anticipated. He also said that we will be continuing to challenge the decision and will be approaching the European Convention of Human Rights without delay.
I admire Guy's pluck. I mean, he is a committed fella. I spoke to him last year, I think, about Fee's continued detention in a extensive interview, which you can find in the podcast archives. He just must be tearing his hair out.
Yeah.
It's just setback after setback of getting Fee out of London. And the boat looks awful. Actually, there's scaffolding all over it. Yeah,
I haven't seen it.
Well, there's a feature going in the October issue, which we are putting to press now. That'll be the one at the Monaco Yacht Show, a big story about Fee. It's current state stuck in Canary Wharf in London. Yeah. So So it's a good story, and it kind of brings you up to date, really, about those the ongoing travails of that boat. We're going to finish the news. It's going to be hard, this, because it's really dreadful news. So many of us in this industry know the wonderful Halit Yücay very, very well. He's the charismatic founder of Mazu Yachts in Turkey. So Halit's yacht the wreckage of his yacht was found floating off Marmara Island in the Sea of Marmara in Turkey. And it's understood he was en route to Mykonos, sailing solo in his yacht. And the boat, we understand, collided with a cargo ship en route. Halit has not been found. He's just the loveliest guy with an amazing wife, Rania, and a beautiful family. So everyone who knows and loves him is still obviously hoping for the best. But that was really shocking news to hear, because, I love seeing Halit at boat shows and the boat international events he comes to, because, you know, he always bounds up to you with a beaming smile on his face. And he's a young, really interesting Turkish entrepreneur. Founded this shipyard, built some great boats, doing some really cool stuff. So fingers crossed, we learn what happened in that that terrible accident. And our thoughts obviously go out to the whole Mazu Yachts family, and obviously Halit's direct family at this terrible time. Queenie, I know I always ask you to do the hardest thing in any kind of broadcasting situation, is follow terrible news with good news. But we want to talk about some winter charter, because you've been talking to brokers over the last couple of weeks. So what have you learned?
So it's never too early. I know we're still in summer, and I know that we don't want to just completely forget summer's still here. But it's never too early to look towards the winter season and see how people can get the most out of winter charter. So when I say winter charter, what springs to mind?
What, Caribbean?
Yeah, classic. And we pretty much, it is that, because we now pretty much refer to the winter season as the Caribbean season. But it's not just about the islands over there. So firstly, I was going to put this to you. If you could choose one ultimate winter charter destination, where would you go? Any ideas? Don't just say Caribbean, because that's not wild enough.
New Zealand.
Okay. Yeah, that's very good. It's on the list. I basically wanted to see where the brokers think is the most exciting place for a winter charter in 2025. What was interesting was to see how polarized the choices are. Some brokers favor the heat of the Caribbean, the Maldives, while others think that clients should be chasing icebergs in Antarctica or the fjords of Norway. It shows how winter charters have truly split into two camps, the kind of barefoot luxury Caribbean escape versus the expedition-driven cold weather adventure. So where are the most interesting places to go? We have a few different opinions here. We've got Christabel Nye from Camper Nicholson said that the Caribbean's Leeward Islands remain unbeatable. She says that each island has its own distinct character, from the history of Nelson's Dockyard in Antigua to the barefoot glamour of St. Bart's. I should have banned that. No one's allowed to mention St. Bart's, because we all know it.
Is St. Bart's barefoot? I mean, I suppose it is.
Is it?
It's a bit more...
You've spent a lot of time there.
I have. Barefoot glamour seems a bit more... It's a bit more bohemian to
Yeah.
me. Shabbat's is quite shishy, isn't it? Like, it's very shishy, let's face it.
Well, you would know.
Yeah.
But...
I've walked barefoot in Shabbat's.
Exactly.
But I'm not glamorous, so it doesn't work.
Yes, well, yeah. It doesn't need to be one or the other. We then have some different choices from Ocean Independence. Haniki Maljars, the senior charter consultant, says that Norway would be at the top of the list. And there's something magical about gliding through snowy fjords, stopping at cozy villages, and watching the northern lights dance across the sky from the comfort of a yacht.
But you wouldn't go to Norway in the European summer. Yeah, European winter, rather.
Well, you could if you're going to do a big expedition and go skiing.
But you go there now, though.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I would kill to go to Norway. Might be going to Norway.
I wouldn't want to go to Norway in December. I wouldn't charter in Norway in December, would you?
I wouldn't, but I suppose when does the ski season start in Norway?
I suppose that's
heli skiing from the yacht, going back, having a little apres on the boat.
No, maybe you would then.
Yeah, a little glühwein, or the Norwegian equivalent, which I don't know. But I love Norway. Norway would be the top of my charter list. I just think it's so beautiful. And actually, Ocean Independence have a really unusual CA in Norway for this. It's a 46-meter expedition yacht called Freya, and it's got that really intense utilitarian look, which I think is quite cool when it comes to adventure charter. You wouldn't necessarily think it was a super yacht when you're from the outside, but it is really cool. It's like proper expedition. It will make you feel that you're doing something really crazy. So maybe that is good for winter, like the depths of winter. And that is available for €144,000 a week. Cookson also put the spotlight on Northern Norway. Kevin O'Connor, their head of yacht, said that for this November to January, see, it is winter, it's the best time to visit for incredible orca and humpback whale encounters due to the herring migration. So there is draw if you're really into seeing orcas and humpbacks.
Pack your parka.
Yeah.
It's going to be very cold.
It is going to be cold. And don't come at us if it is too cold. But, you know, we warned you at least. And New Zealand, so you're right, is on the list too, from Waiko. Townsend Prusy, charter broker, said for something epic, I'd have to say cruising from the North Island in New Zealand to the South Island, the scenery is just spectacular and it's a hot spot for diving. I've heard that though, that diving there is phenomenal.
And the fishing and the outdoorsiness of it and the remoteness of it. I mean, New Zealand, there's only 5 million people or something like that in New Zealand. So there are areas of it that do feel really unspoilt and untouched. So you can find wilderness if that's what you're looking for. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful country.
It really is. I haven't actually been there.
Well, you must.
I must. Lucinda Rosen at Cesarite kept things classic and recommended St. Bart's again. I mean, of course, it was going to get in the listings. Last year, do you know how many yachts were there last year?
150?
173 as of the 31st of December. That week is just, I mean, you're going to get an amazing party. You're going to see everyone. I don't know if I want that.
Yeah, see the St. Bart's parking lot.
Yeah, I don't know if that's cool or not.
I don't know. It obviously is because, you know, some of the most amazing boats go there.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. So the big thing about St. Bart's, just going back to the end of the St. Bart's thing, the big thing about St. Bart's is obviously the New Year's Eve party, but it's not the only one where yachts would be amazing for a New Year's Eve party. For Fraser Yachts, Tove Johnson offered two very different takes for New Year's, Aruba with the beach fireworks and street parties, or a barefoot barbecue on a deserted beach in Raja Ampat under a star-filled sky.
That sounds great.
I think it sounds lovely. Waiko suggested Antigua, which we know is lovely. It's basically just very cool and relaxed without the chaos of St. Bart's. And it goes on, the list goes on. Cookson, Pretty Rose, Cuba, which I think would be really cool. A bit of salsa and rum cocktails. There's a lot of cool ideas out there. But naturally, I think we are also expecting the big rush to St. Bart's as people do love the glitz of Gustavia.
Mm.
And then I also asked the brokers what trends they're seeing this winter. And the consensus is adventure and remoteness are still driving demand. EOS noted that Antarctica has gone from niche to the hottest destination in expedition cruises. And I think this is a really interesting transition because a few years ago, heading down to Antarctica was the wildest thing that you could do in adventure charter. And now there's a lot of activity down there. It's difficult to I've been there and I thought it was phenomenal and one of the best things I've ever done. So I think it's still worth exploring and feeling that remoteness. But there's been a real push from the cruise industry to get there. So lots of people are experiencing it. It's becoming more accessible. So it is becoming slightly less of an uncharted territory. But I do still recommend it because those icebergs are just incredible. But it's one of those scenarios where you see, you know, super yachting has actually been almost forced out by cruise, which I know happens. But I think that happened really quickly as well. So 3 years ago, Antarctica was still very much kind of the wild frontier of the world, but it's slowly becoming more and more people go.
Mm.
It's also worth noting that it's very difficult to get a charter down there still. So the Fraser brokers said that the yachts going to Antarctica are booked 1 to 2 years in advance. So clients would really need to book early for this destination, which again will force people to look at alternative choices. But the message is clear, the Caribbean and the Bahamas do remain strong, but clients are still chasing those remote escapes to get away from everyone else, excluding St. Bart's, of course. That'll always be the number one, always.
Yeah, but it does seem there's a general trend for isolation.
Yeah. Well, that's why a few we'll publish this in a full story, but a lot of people recommended Madagascar and some of the African countries. And I know that
I was talking to Pierluigi Loropiani the other day, because he's in Indonesia at the minute on his 51-meter explorer Mascanada, but he's making his way back to the Med a bit later this year, and he meant he's going to stop at Madagascar.
It's amazing.
And it's one of those places, you know sometimes in life someone will say something and then they'll mention a random car, and then you kind of see three of the same car and you think, is that a weird coincidence, or I've just never noticed that car? Someone's mentioned Madagascar to me. It was probably you.
It definitely was me.
Yeah, it was.
Brilliant feature of Madagascar.
And then I must have spoken to five or six people over the last few months, and they've all mentioned Madagascar.
There's so much going on there.
Yeah.
And I think it's so cool. It's perfectly set up for yachts, and it's really wild, and it's safe. People are kind of unfazed by yachts down there. It's one of the poorest countries in the world, but generally people are unfazed by yachts going there, and there's just incredible like heliocs and the wildlife's insane. It's so beautiful. The beaches are amazing. And I think there are loads. There's a couple of really beautiful hotels that have opened up, which is why I went. And so it's got everything you need now. It's that really cool, it's just on the cusp of becoming popular. So
get there now. If you go, get there now, basically.
Absolutely. And then you've got Reunion Island, which is a really unusual place. It's where Octopus went years and years ago. And the Reunion is essentially a big volcano, but in France. It's a really strange experience because it is very French. And then you can go up to Mauritius. So you've got a lot there, or you can go back to the mainland and cruise around there. But there's so much to see. And I think still, it's very unlikely you're going to come across another yacht there. Mm. But there's just so much to see. So I think it's a really exciting place. I love writing itineraries for Madagascar. We've actually just written one with EOS, and there's so much to see. And, you know, you're not going to see lemurs in their natural habitat anywhere else in the world. You're not going to see
baobab.
Yeah, trees. And then you go to Tana and to Navarino.
You know what you haven't mentioned as a winter destination?
Where?
Red Sea.
The Red Sea is on the list. It is on the list. It will be mentioned in the piece, but yeah, another fantastic choice. I think Fraser say that the brokers are also spotting demand for Costa Rica, Indonesia, and the Red Sea. Again, though, limited number of yachts means that you need to book one in advance. So,
the Red Sea fascinates me. I mean, I was actually on the weekend, I was down at a dinner at the Squadron and Cows with the Amala Yacht Club guys, and it's really amazing what they. I mean, there's quite a lot of infrastructure now in Amala. There's, you know, hotels and lovely resorts, and there's an airport, and there's this something out of Star Wars. There's this place called Desert Rock, which looks unreal. It's sort of one of those resorts. It's inland, obviously, but it's built into these amazing red cliffs, and you think that can't be real, that can't exist, but it does.
Amazing.
They built it. It is unbelievable. So, you know, Amala is a really interesting place. And there's this resort called Shibara, which has these kind of alien-like metallic pods floating over the water. I was very lucky to spend some time there last year. And again, it's like, this place can't exist, but it does exist. It's there. So, you know, slowly but surely, the Red Sea is getting there as the infrastructure develops, services improve. I think in 10 years' time, the Red Sea will be a fully legitimate winter charter or winter cruising destination for the Med fleet. Because when you look at the statistics, and I was saying this to the guys in Cowes, everyone thinks there's this huge migration, Med to Caribbean, Caribbean to Med, but it's only a small number of the Med fleet that goes, you know, between 300 or 400 yachts to make the crossing from the Med to the Caribbean, leaving thousands upon thousands of yachts in the Med. if those yachts that stay in the Med are offered a chance to extend their season into the Red Sea and do the amazing diving, the experience, the incredible beaches, the untouched, pristine nature of the environment, and that could be really sold to them.
Yeah.
I think there's a huge, you know, there's a huge market there for the Red Sea.
And the more the things, more things are opening, and it's just becoming more.
And it's more new and exciting, and, you know, so, yeah.
Do you know where I want to go?
Go on.
I know this is going to sound quite self-indulgent. I want to go to Georgia in the Black Sea. I spent ages trying to be like, is anyone willing to bring a yacht into the Black Sea? And not many people said yes.
I don't imagine now's the...
No, not a great time at the moment. But apparently it's so beautiful.
Yeah, but it is beautiful.
And the inventor of wine. It's quite well suited to me. and it's got amazing climbing and lots of wine. Beautiful.
Georgia and Georgia. We'll make that happen. Don't worry.
Yeah, I'm going to push it quite hard, I think.
Well, I think thanks, Queenie, for indulging me and joining me on the boat briefing. The first one we've done for a little while.
Yeah.
I hope there's some information in there for everyone listening.
We'll do more frequent ones now.
We're back now. And as boat show season ramps up, there will be more and more to talk about every week. And that brings us to a close.
Yeah, perfect.
Thank you all for tuning in to this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. As ever, it was a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we will see you soon.
See you next time.